Today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and I'm talking with fathering expert and good friend Dr. Ken Canfield here at the American Association of Christian Counselors at their convention in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm joined by our co-host, Dr. Meg Meeker. Dr. Canfield is the founder of the National Center for Fathering, a virtual training center to equip fathers and father figures. And he's appeared on NBC's Today Show, ABC's World News Tonight, and the Oprah Winfrey Show. But he doesn't just talk, he actually walks the walk. He and his wife, Dee, have been married 29 years, and they have 5 children. How many grandchildren now?
9.
9 grandchildren. And Dr. Canfield's insights come from his research and his home life, and he is a guy that knows what he's talking about. Dr. Canfield, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome, Ryan. It's a delight to be with you.
I tell you, I am so excited about this interview because I love your work, what you do, and I love you're so inspiring and encouraging. As we were talking before we went on the air about the father movement, which I hope you talk about a little bit later in the program, around the world. Mm-hmm. So cool.
It is.
You've got a new book called The Heart of a Father, and for those joining us, I want to let you know there is a little noise in the background. We're on the floor of a convention, so if you hear a little talking, things like that, that's what it is. Tell me, you know, I've written a couple books, and people say, well, why did you write it? And usually it's, I say, because I had to. It's just that it was a compulsion to write. Why did you write A Heart of a Father?
Well, undoubtedly, if we looked at a silver bullet and said, what would help families better than anything? It's not more money. It's not a change in family structure. It's actual father heart involvement. I found this in the 80s as I was thinking, what can I do and contribute to this country that's given me so much? Mm. And it's interesting, Ryan, that was the Promise Keepers time, and the men's movement was kind of bubbling up, and I became friends with a lot of them, and I talked about this father deficit and void, which, Meg, you know, is big in the heart of women as it is men.
Yes.
And so what I did is help men kind of navigate the pain, the challenges, and the blessings, like you, where you have had, you know, an investment of a healthy father. I mean, that's something that money can't buy.
Yep.
And people were kind of dumbfounded that there were so many broken men because they didn't have that connection. And so that's behind this book. And so I walk through what it takes to deal with the father wound and deficit, and then get guys going on a real simple way to engage their kids throughout their life.
Mm, I want to get into that. Dr. Ken, I also want to ask, that might be a provocative thought in this day and age, that what really is going to help is fathers, because we're being told by culture that it doesn't matter what parent you have, you just need two of them. It doesn't matter if you've got two moms or two dads or even one. Are fathers really that big of a deal? Is that really the linchpin issue?
You hit it, Ryan. In an androgynous culture that kind of demeans both sexes, not just fathers, but mothers.
That's right.
What we have to do is distinguish what unique things fathers bring and mothers bring to the forefront. And this is it. When you start looking at data, particularly in the inner city, I lived for a couple of years in inner city Los Angeles, Jordan Downs, Watts area.
Oh, yeah.
And I tell you, almost every household had a father, a grandfather, or uncle incarcerated.
Mm.
So what you get is a divorce from the family, so to speak, and that vacuum was just fodder for the gangs. They said, oh, we'll move in if there's not a male role model that was attentive, protective, and so forth.
And we'll prey on the young men.
Oh, that's right, Meg. It was awful. They were recruiting at junior high. So this is something that I've used to kind of distinguish and put it out there. I really am cautious about talking about parenting. Why? Because many men will say parenting, oh, he must be talking about my wife. To remove any doubt, I say there are certain things that dads do that moms can't do, and vice versa. There are certain things.
Yeah.
And we start to see that. We see men kind of rise. Oh, my goodness. You mean I can do something? My kids need me? Exactly. And as you have written, Meg, about daughters, when they see a father kind of rise to their occasion and turn their heart and attention and affection, the daughter's heart melts. Mm. And it comes in a powerful way bonded to that dad. And that's powerful, and that's what we need to see more of.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I've always heard that, and I've believed it, but I experienced it for the first time this year. I went on a sabbatical and I went away for a month. I went down to Arizona, my family stayed in Colorado Springs, and then my wife did the same thing a month later, and I was a single parent for a month. Now, my kids are used to my wife staying with them. I travel every now and then. Usually the fall is pretty busy. So dad being gone was a big deal, but it wasn't a huge deal in the family. And when I was the single dad for a month, it really showed me I cannot do it all. It's not just that parenting is a two-part job. It's a mommy-daddy job.
It is.
It really, really is. And it also showed me that traveling too much isn't good for my family because I need to actually physically be there in their faces all the time.
Ryan, that's bold for you to say that. Mm-hmm. On national radio, and let me just say, and because I've talked to many men in your position, you can build great ministries and great businesses, but it extracts a toll on you mm-hmm. in your family involvement. You read what Billy Graham wrote now in his 90s. Dr. Graham, if you did it over, what would you do differently? I would preach less, I would study more, and the big one is I'd spend more time with my family. Now, here's one of the leaders of Christendom, mm-hmm. Proud to be an American leader, too, and he's saying, family, hello, we've got to invest. And for dads, what you're saying, this is even critical. Now, Meg, what would you say as it relates to that, just from what you're seeing right now?
I would boil it down to something as simple as a father just present in the home. Even if he didn't talk a lot, but having the father's physical being in the home stabilizes a family and say, oh, come on, they need to be insightful and they need to know how to express their feelings to their kids. Well, yeah, I mean, those are nice things, but we know that when you're sex trafficking girls, one of the biggest risk factors for a girl being sex trafficked is not having a dad in the home. When dads are there, children feel safe, they feel protected, they feel worthwhile, they feel valued, because children look to their dads very differently than they look at their moms. And this is something that I've seen in children, I've never read it in studies, but children have a sense that dad doesn't need to be there, but when he is there, it's really important because he's chosen to. Mothers, on the other hand, a child believes, always have to be there. You know, your mother's always going to love you no matter what because she's your mom. But your dad, if he chooses to be with you more, you must be really something. That's from a child's heart,
yeah,
not from a study. Mm-hmm. And that's what I see. So it's the presence. The physical presence of the father in the home is enormous to a child.
Yeah. Okay, your book is called The Heart of a Father. How is that different from other books? Is it because you're really talking to dad? It's not really a general parenting book.
No.
This is specifically to men saying you got to get in there.
I had the privilege of doing research for probably a couple of decades, collecting data that distinguish the unique things that fathers contributed, Ryan. And what I found undoubtedly is that men haven't been trained in the same way that you would be trained for a position or a vocation. And what they needed were not just tips, for sure the challenge to be physically present, but how do you stay emotionally present and engaged? And what do you do, particularly during the windows of fathering from the birth, which is a magical time? If you can get dads involved with the birth process, you know, Dr. Meeker, that is a profound experience for both. But then when they move through the life cycle, Ryan, they get ready to go to school. This father involvement in just reading to their children helps them achieve higher standards than they would if they were just kind of left to their own devices. And adolescence, oh my goodness, if a father engenders a child, I mean physiologically, what does that say about gender security as they move through the passage into adulthood? If he's not there, there is this ambiguous time. Well, who am I? Where did I come from? Why did he drop out of my life?
Yeah, exactly.
And you complicate that with divorce and many other frames of family that sometimes end up in large gaps of father absence and so forth.
Ken, let's talk about those teen years. My dad talks about that a lot. I can remember him talking about how, you know, dads with their kids, like I am with mine, and we were huggy, we're kissy, you know, my 3-year-old runs around the house naked all the time. I don't care. It doesn't bother me.
Too much information. Yeah. Too much.
But he says that oftentimes when a girl hits puberty and her body starts changing, the dad feels awkward. I don't know how to hug you anymore. I don't know how to be around. It's not my little girl. You're growing up. And oftentimes a dad will pull away a little bit. But to that daughter, it feels like rejection. Mm-hmm. Why are you rejecting me? And it leads to lots of problems. During that time, what can a dad do? How can he still be there all the time like that?
Well, you can write notes on her mirror, because the mirror tells a girl what she looks like, that I love you, sweetheart. I like your smile. I like your heart. I mean, because girls are in touch with mirrors throughout that
segment of their life.
And then he can look at other ways. This affirming notes, special attention during times of difficulty, when in this day and age, the whole world can turn in 30 seconds. And for a teenage daughter, maybe 15 seconds. So be attentive to those things that are challenging her. And when you stay that close in touch, it doesn't mean you have to touch regularly, but be sure you do. During that time, that connection with her is going to set her precedent for the type of guy that she is going to one day perhaps have a relationship, marry, and dads get ready for this, carry your grandchild. So your investment in nurturing this mother of another generation is critical. You can't defer to other things. I mean, they'll just steal and strip her innocence.
Sure.
You need to be intentional and proactive.
So you're saying, you know, when the world changes every 15 seconds, to validate that?
Yes.
You know, not to diminish those feelings,
absolutely
diminish those,
not,
you know, dramatic, drama-induced moments, but to validate her feelings in those times?
That's right. And as Meg mentioned, it's a lot of it's just being there.
One of the things, a benefit I think that a dad brings to the table with a teenage daughter, is dads tend to talk less than women, so they listen more than a mom would. I know as a mother of 3 grown daughters now, I interrupted my girls constantly. Nope, 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 you got to do this. And my husband wouldn't, but they would talk more freely to him because he didn't interrupt them all the time.
So dads, here's the deal. This individuation and the separation from mother is important. They will be attracted to that calming presence if you're not, like Meg suggested, interrupting, but you're just listening.
You're listening.
I mean, you have one mouth and 2 ears.
Yes.
Now, why is that?
Yeah. In the book, you talk about the father power, and you also talk about how that's dwindled. What is the father power, and how is it dwindling? How is that lessening?
Well, I think institutionally, we discovered, even in the medical community, that it was not only a good idea, it was brilliant to engage dads in the birth process. Dad, there is a deep emotional side to you, to your brain, and I think if anything brings the brain chemistry to its height, it's for you to turn your heart to your children. There's something that will go on internally when you intentionally focus on what this child needs. Be a participant in their life, even when it's difficult. That, I think, brings a reciprocity of life.
Dr. Meg, Ken's talking about being pretty vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And I think in a lot of circles, especially with men, vulnerability is seen as something that you shouldn't aspire to, that it's a weakness in men. But he's saying the opposite, that we should be vulnerable. In your practice and seeing dads and daughters and in your work with strong fathers, strong daughters, should men really be that vulnerable around their kids?
I would say it is one of the most crucial, if not the crucial element in helping to turn a child's life around. I also tell dads, the most forgiving person you'll ever meet in your life is your daughter. Because your daughter wants more of you. She either wants more healing, more conversations, or she wants more time with you. You know, your wife, maybe not so. You know, because that's an adult-adult relationship.
Absolutely.
But with a child, it's a child-adult relationship.
Correct.
So they're connected to their dad by a need-based love.
You only have one.
Only have one. So they need more and they want more. And I will tell you, I've seen children's faces just sort of melt right before my eyes when I look at a father and I'll say, tell me what you think about her. Tell me what you feel about her. And the dad will choke back tears. And it may be the first time ever in her life he says, I think she's so insightful this way. And the little girl, that changes who that child becomes.
Absolutely. Now, Ryan, we are on a hot track because we're getting ready to open up what I'd say a perspective of fatherhood that's been too long shut. It's absolutely right. Kids think their dads are, as a young child, smarter, stronger, and richer than any other man on the planet. Okay, so they have this grandiose idea. Now, when they reach adolescence, they begin to see, now, is this guy following what he has, mm-hmm. you know, laid down as the law of the household, etc.? And this is where vulnerability, I believe, can take a new course. And it's when dads learn these three things: to say, I was wrong, I am sorry, will you forgive me? Yeah. Now, how does a child learn to be a humble, repentant person if they haven't seen it modeled? They just don't. And so many times this endowment and entitlement that, you know, they can run off with hasn't been tempered by a humble, gracious, and in your words, vulnerable dad. Now, this is not easy to do because you're at a time where you have to be the anchor. But how many of us know about our own fathers if he would just say that? Or if, wow, he was sorry for getting upset or doing this or that, or just say, sweetheart, I went over the top. Will you forgive me? I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I tell you, then we have the vulnerability that this Facebook generation already knows. Okay, one of my concerns is on Facebook, they tell too much stuff. Yeah. I mean, you know,
too much sharing.
But what it is a cry for vulnerability.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Will
That's
somebody
right.
share at my level? Yeah. And when dads start to model this, I think we're going to see mm-hmm. the family dynamism mm-hmm. grow in
because
strength.
They don't need it from outside the family. You know, right. And I tell this with parents of teenage girls who are afraid they're going to be sexually active. I said, look, all teen girls are looking for, and even Oprah would agree, is they want male intimacy. They want a connection. It's not a sexual thing. It's they want to feel special and important to a man, even if it isn't real. Mm-hmm. They feel so needy. But if they have that need met, even on the most basic level in their home, they don't go looking for it.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, to the dads out there listening, it's easier to say you're sorry to your kids if you start when they're younger.
When I tried to model this just sitting around the dinner table, I discovered and knew this to be true, but I was describing an incident with five kids growing up, and you know the dynamics, Meg. It's just, you know, trying to manage through a meal and have a little time to share and report in the day. And I said, you know, I was thinking about the other night when I kind of was over the top, and I just want you to know I was wrong there, and I hope I didn't, you know, hurt anybody. You could have heard a pin drop, Meg. Mm. It's like, and then one of my sons said, Dad, could you repeat that again? one more time,
One more time, Dad.
Yeah.
And I've got the recorder on my phone out now.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So this vulnerability is, that's a high standard. I mean, if one father sent a son to be vulnerable in a way that has changed the planet, why can't we, as fathers, model that same sort of lifestyle as we're seeking to do?
Mm-hmm. You know, you talk in your book about a three-pronged approach to fathering. Can you quickly go over what that three-prong is?
Absolutely. It's beginning with wrestling with the issues of your past. Mm. I have any guy that I work with in a long-term relationship do a genogram. I map out the relationship he had with his dad and, if possible, his grandfather. I look for likenesses and differences. And for a dad to really be what he can, he first has to be a son. Because if you don't reconcile the issues of your sonship, you are just going to pass that on. Mm. You read about the sins of the fathers passing on. Acorns don't fall from the tree. So you've got to reconcile that. So
but
that's
Ken,
part
what do
of
you
it.
Say to a man who didn't have a dad at home?
The earlier, Meg, he can find out, you know, how did I fill that father void?
What did I want from my dad and didn't get?
Oh, yes. Mm. I worked with guys who are incarcerated. And I had them do this. It was a profound exercise. We, after writing a letter to our fathers, and those letters were full of expletives. You can imagine. They were just all tied up, which 80% of those who are incarcerated right now had a fractured or never formed relationship. Yeah. Then I said this, I want you to write a want ad for what you want in a dad.
Oh,
it
oh
was off
goodness.
The chart. And these
Do you
guys,
have those letters?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh. Part of them are in the book.
Oh,
and so what's powerful, Meg, is even when a dad isn't there, we know what he should be if he was there. And we start to look for that in other men. Now, what cuts it off is when this culture or when a disruptive influence exploits that, strips the innocence of a man, he gets in a gang or, you know, gets in a behavior that is not healthy, and it's to fill that emotional connection that a dad can bring. Mm-hmm. Man, dads are important.
I had a friend, he was buying a house, and he just called and he said, I just feel like my dad should give me advice about this. I just don't have that. I don't know if I'm making a mistake. Isn't a dad supposed to tell you those things?
Oh, my goodness. So is that the book of Proverbs or not?
Yeah.
Get wisdom, my son, from your father.
And he was in his 30s at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
Successful, athletic, everything going for him. And he still just said, my dad should be giving me advice. I shouldn't have to go someplace else for it.
Meg, there was a dissertation done of daughters who were entering into college, and they had lost their dads due to premature death. And they were asked these two questions. Okay, what do you miss in your dad now that you're adult and alone, and what do you hope? And classically, the thing, I miss that my dad will not be able to walk me down the aisle, you know, the depth there. But the other is what Ryan just said. I miss having my dad help me make decisions, to think through issues. And even though kids pick that up, just having that presence and having that advice is a power to them so that they can make an informed, right decision.
Exactly.
My dad still helps me with that stuff. He talked me into buying a lesser priced house. The other house was more expensive. It was bigger. It had a better view. It was a great house. And he just said, Rye, I just think you might be making a mistake. I mean, you're going to have to pay that bill every single month. Mm-hmm. Do you really want to get into something that big? And I took the lesser house. I thank him for it all the time. I never have to think about my mortgage.
Well,
I'm in a great neighborhood, but we didn't know that at the time. But he saved me from untold heartache.
Well, and not only that, intuitively what he did, the wisdom he probably gained from his parents and so forth and so on, because that was an endowment, he strengthened your marriage because of the financial tension that is there.
And number one cause of divorce.
Oh,
yes.
Absolutely.
Money fights. Yep.
Yes,
yep.
Here we are. And
and
just doing and following through it affirmed what was going to be good for his grandchildren.
Yeah, that's right.
Which now both of you can be ecstatic about.
Mm-hmm. Ken, I hate to do this. We are out of time. This is a phenomenal book. I hope we've given people enough because it makes me want to read the rest of it. Mm. It makes me want to get in there. So much nuts and bolts help you out right now. It's not this kind of esoterical think about it. This is things you can put to practice right now and see an immediate result. I really like it.
I want to give one a final plug.
Yeah.
You know, you think about dads and how important it is for men to read this so they can be better dads. Mothers need to read it. Women need to read it so that we can understand what we can do to help support the father of our children, because it's so important. So I would encourage women to read it as well.
Yeah. Ken, thanks for being here.
You're
thanks
welcome,
for writing that
Ryan.
Book too.
You're
thanks.
Welcome, Meg.
Thank you.
Oh, what a great example of the power fathers have. And you can see how a father's influence lasts long after his children leave the home, and it can even shape the home his grandchildren grow up in. That's why we think it's so important to share programs like this with you to help you in your parenting journey. And for any father out there who may be thinking he's already blown it because his kids are older, we want you to know it's never too late to step into this crucial role. Dr. Canfield's book, The Heart of a Father is a great resource to help you start wherever you are. It includes a chapter of practical tips for every stage of fatherhood, from birth through grandfathering. And for even more great tips, check out the National Center for Fathering, a fatherhood ministry Dr. Canfield founded to provide virtual training for any man who wants to be a championship father. You'll find a link to those resources at our website, drjamesdobson.org. And in closing, let me say one of the best gifts a father can give his children is a strong relationship with their mother. And we have a resource that can help you or someone you love do the hard work of repairing a struggling marriage. My dad's book, Love Must Be Tough, is a game changer. It is full of proven strategies to help you fight for the marriage you want. And for a donation of $20 or more this month, Family Talk will say thank you by sending you a copy of Love Must Be Tough. Your family is worth it, and your marriage is worth it. So take advantage of this exclusive offer today by calling us at 877-732-6825 or by clicking the tab at drjamesdobson.org. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless, thanks for listening today, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.